Interview with Don and Alice McKee on April 12, 2003. We are meeting at the George's House at 512 Herning Road in Fairbanks, Alaska. Okay, well, we're set to go here. And I think the first thing I always want to know is, why did you come to Alaska? What prompted it?
Well, that's something we've been asked that a lot of times. And it goes back to, we were dating before I went into service. And I was drafted into the Army and wound up over in Europe and followed Patton across Germany. And after the war was over, I was in the Army of Occupation down in Vienna. And we were corresponding back and forth all the time. And she was in nurses training at Mounds Midway in Minneapolis,
St. Paul.
And so one night I wrote her a letter from Vienna and told her when I got out of service, I wanted to go to Alaska. And two or three days later, I got a letter from her saying when she got out of nurses training, she wanted to go to Alaska. And our letters had crossed. We had never discussed it before. So I guess we were supposed to come to Alaska. just one of those things.
So you didn't come up here with the military as so many people did? No,
in fact, I got out of service 46 and we were married in 47 illegally.
Not illegal.
Well,
I wasn't supposed to be married when I was in nurses training. I still had 15 months. We were married secretly, not illegal.
Oh, okay. That's a difference, isn't it?
It is a difference.
Anyhow.
Well, we were married illegally, too. The minister put down the wrong date.
Yeah.
And in the state of Oregon, you have to...
And a three-day waiting period, I think it was, if I remember.
He messed up on the day.
Yeah.
So we had to come back into town and hunt him down and get him, explain to him what was wrong and have him scribble in a new date.
Scratch off
right.
The old evidence.
Acceptable to the court.
So you came up in, what, about 51?
51, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, she'd gone to work nursing and I had a little shop in our hometown and kind of abandoned the idea of going to Alaska. Just too many other things got in the way. And
no money for one thing.
Yeah. Anyhow, one evening I was working on a fella's car there in the shop and Saturday night he wrecked his car and he and I were working on it. And we decided to go over to the local pool hall and have us a beer before they closed up about 11:30. And we walked in there and there was a fella standing there that my friend knew, Smitty. And they got talking and this fella was trying to talk Smitty into going to Alaska with him. Smitty had no interest in going to Alaska at all. And I didn't know the guy. I didn't butt into the conversation. And after they got done talking, I told Smitty, I said, gee, I'd like a chance to go to Alaska like that. Well, what do you want to go? Yeah, I'd go. Well, if you go, I'll go. So Sunday afternoon, we went over and visited this fellow. Well, the fellow we went and visited was Bob Lindy. And Bob Bob had been up here the summer of 50 and had made arrangements to drive two rigs back up here. He was driving up a brand new Pontiac Catalina and a new Ford pickup. And he'd gone back to get his family and was going to haul all their stuff up in the pickup. Well, his wife flat refused to come up here. She wasn't going up there and living in any igloo. So Bob was looking for somebody to drive a car back for him. So it wound up there were four of us fellas, Smitty and Bob and a fellow by the name of Ray Cayley and I. And we drove the two rigs up. And that's how we got to Alaska. That's how I got here then.
Well, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. I went to work. I just come up by a toolbox and a suitcase, you know. Mm-hmm. I was going to spend the summer and see what things were like. She was back there. We had our oldest son was born in 49, and she was expecting our, we were expecting our daughter, June of 51. June, yeah. So she was in no condition for traveling. And so I went to work in a service station, with the old Star service station. Watched the Northrop building come up out of the ground.
Uh-huh.
It was a hole in the ground when I was working there across the street. And I was working there in the station one evening, and a car pulled up. And here's my sister and brother-in-law. They had decided to come to Alaska. We had no idea they were even thinking about it. And he went to work for Rudy Voigt. He was a body and fender man. He went to work for Rudy Voigt. And he and Rudy had their differences of opinion, and so
I can understand that.
Mel made, my brother-in-law made friends with Mike Agbaba, who had Checker Cab.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother-in-law had run a Pontiac garage down in Princeton, Minnesota, and Mike run all Pontiacs. So they, Mike was real interested.
I bet.
And so Mike had a control of a shop over on 4th and Wickersham. It was owned by Ernie Schirmer. And Ernie had left here and was down in Seattle. And Mike offered Mel that shop for $75 a month. But number one priority was Checker Cabs. We could do anything else we wanted to do in that shop, but Checker Cabs come first. So I quit Star Service and went in with Mal in partnership in this garage. And we run that garage summer, rest of that summer in 52. And one day old Mike used to come in. He lived just up the street. And he came in the shop one morning, and he had met my sister. He came in one morning and he asked me, he said, "Are you married?" And I said, "Yeah." Where's your wife? And I said, "Back in Minnesota." "Oh, she's got no business being there with you here." And so we talked about it a little. Mike left. A little while later, Mike came back in the shop and he said, "Hey," he said, "Al Palat down the Northrop building wants to talk to you. You're in the Nordale Hotel, wants to talk to you." Okay, I thought it was for a car repair job of some kind, so I went down to the Nordale Hotel and asked Al Palat. "Oh yeah, he's in the office in the back here." I went back there. That was the Pan Am office. Mike had gone down there and signed the contract to fly now and pay later, and wanted me to sign it and sent her a ticket.
Okay.
I've had a soft spot for old Mike ever since.
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was 51, yet. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We came up the day Kathy was 6 weeks old. Uh-huh. At that time, babies couldn't fly until they were 6 weeks old.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Came up in July.
Right. You what, flew into Seattle and then... Direct.
I don't even remember, but I expect so.
Well, it was a slower flight in those days, whatever it was.
Well, it could have been, if you flew northwest, well, the Pan Am, or if you flew northwest, they went into Edmonton from Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't remember where.
Yeah.
That's too long ago.
Yeah. So where did you live?
Well, we rented.
We lived in a hotel for 10 days.
Yeah.
Talk about fun.
Oh, yeah.
Deluxe Hotel, do you remember that at all?
No, where was
right
it?
Right across from the Grimen building.
Just a hole in the wall.
On Noble.
Oh, yeah, parking lot now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a big
two babies and eating downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I had made an arrangement to rent a house from...
Grandma Boggan.
Dennis White.
So it was Grandma Boggan's.
No. No, Dennis White. They called him Copper. A little short, red-haired kid. And I'd befriended him working there at the station. He used to bring his car in there, and I was the only one he'd allow to work on his car. He took a liking to me somehow. And he had a house down on 2nd Avenue, down by the old creamery, the old Matt May's creamery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we had made arrangements to rent that house, but he couldn't get his tenants out of it. So we lived in a hotel for first week or 10 days we were here. Finally got in that little cabin.
Oh,
and you know, that's something I mentioned just the other day. We were talking about things like that, how you have to lock everything up, you know. We never even had a key for that cabin. We never locked anything up.
No. Our old house, we couldn't lock it.
Yeah.
What time of year was this that you spent the 10 days?
In July.
Yeah.
So midsummer. So the trappers had all disappeared.
Yeah, they would have been gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you live there? No, you must not have lived there the whole time you were in town.
No,
we were there several years.
We lived there for about a year. Then we got a place out on, we got a little apartment first, out on Marianne. We lived there just a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we bought a place.
No, we lived down there.
23rd.
By the, where we had the rooming house.
That's right. We rented from old Cecil Wells. He had a rooming house and cabin right beside where the courthouse is now. There was a little cabin with a big two-story rooming house, log house behind.
Okay.
And we,
this was
we
on Wendell? Would have been on Wendell?
Well, it backed up to Wendell. It was on First. Our cabin was on First, right across
okay.
from Polaris.
All right.
In there.
That big old two-story red...
It was log.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember whether the... Well,
it's been gone for a long time.
Yeah.
They took it down and they put a service station in there first. Then they moved the service station across the street afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But we lived there for a while. That was an interesting little enterprise, running a rooming house.
You were actually running it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
living there and running it.
Yeah. And then working a job besides,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you get up morning, the heating plant was in the basement of this rooming house. And the way to go down and stoke the furnace, you had to go in, and there was a trap door in the floor, in the hallway, and you open the trap door and go down and stoke up the furnace in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Coal, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. One morning, I went, opened the trap door, I saw a pair of feet. There was an old chair down there, and here was a pair of feet in front of that chair. Well, I don't like to walk into something like that cold and alone, you know. Well, Smitty, my buddy that came up here with us, he had the first room in the rooming house. I went over, and he drove cab nights, and he'd just gotten home. I went over and knocked on his door, and I said, Smitty, I said, I might need a little backup. Yeah, okay. And so we went down here, the guy sitting there, passed out, sound asleep in this old chair. And we woke him up and sent him out the door. And another morning, I walked in there, and the bathroom was right at the end of the hall, and the door was closed. Well, that was never closed unless somebody was in there. And I couldn't hear anything, no water running or anything, and so I got a little curious about it, and I eased the door open, and shower curtain was pulled, and here's a pair of feet sticking out under the shower curtain. So again, I went and got Smitty. Smitty and I walked down there, and Smitty said, "Well, isn't that cozy? Here's this guy all curled up on the floor in the shower with his jacket under his head, sound asleep." Smitty reached over, grabbed him by the collar, and hoisted him up, and his bottle rolled out of his jacket. Smitty ushered him out the front door.
You obviously were an attractive haven.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting place.
Yeah.
But
so you were in town for what, 6 years or so?
Yeah.
About like that.
Yeah. Come out here in 57.
Yeah. Well, that must have been, well, how'd you find your place? How did you choose your place out
there? Well, we had lived out on 23rd Street.
23rd.
Well, we lived on 23rd for a while, but then
19th.
My brother-in-law had a shop on 19th in Gillam Way.
Okay.
And he and my sister split up. She took off with some other guy, and he was kind of beside himself and needed some help, so I went over and helped him with the shop. And we were needing a place to live right at that time, and so we made the arrangement. We lived in his house, and I worked with him in the shop. And we had decided we were going to leave Alaska. We had trouble. Our kids were starting to go to school, and neither one of us are city kids. We're country kids, and we just couldn't handle these kids having to run back and forth all the time. You have no control of your own kids. I mean, your neighbors are either over there or your kids are over with the neighbor kids, and it just, well, it got to be too much. We decided we were going to leave and go down, and we had looked at moving to Idaho, because my folks lived in California, her folks lived in Minnesota, and we'd kind of be between.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was all set up that in 57, when school was out, she was going down and find a place, and I was going to try to get things together that summer. And I went to work for the highway department. And I was working as a mechanic there in the shop. And one of the first jobs, I hadn't been there about 2 weeks. And I was sent out to the end of Chena Hot Springs Road to service a cat that was clearing the right-of-way. Well, at that time, the end of Chena Hot Springs Road was at about 14 mile. And so I drove out with the service truck and spent the day with this operator out there, going through his old eight and doing all the things he wanted done to it and so on. And it was a beautiful day, like today is. I mean, it was just a beautiful spring day. And I told this operator, old Francis, I said, "Gee, it's nice out here. This is sure nice." Oh, he said, "This is nothing." He said, "You ought to come out of where we're putting the camp in. That's really nice out there." And he kept on. So Sunday, we borrowed a Jeep from a friend of ours, and we drove out as far as we could go. We got as far as 16 mile, and it drops down into the lakes there. And so we parked the Jeep and put on our hip boots and had a sack lunch with us, and we took off walking, the two of us. And the right-of-way was all cleared, and we walked the right-of-way.
Same as it is now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
We followed that right-of-way, and when we broke over the hill by Bob Hearn's,
mm-hmm.
we could see those big trees, and I said, "That's what Francis was talking about." And we went down there and walked on across the creek to the camp. And Francis came back with us, and we walked all up around the hill there. And now if we're going to file on this, where are we? You know?
Not surveyed.
Yeah.
And So we went down to the right-of-way, and here were stakes down the center line with numbers on them. So we took numbers off of some of those stakes, and Monday morning, well, I went to work, and the wife went down and talked to old T.U. Wilson, highway engineer, and old T.U. got his map out, and he projected out the section lines from one of the maps, and he says, now you go to stake number so-and-so, and I don't remember the stake number, but he says, you go to stake number so-and-so, and you go 150-some feet east and so many feet south, and that should be the section of the corner of section 30 when it's surveyed. So with that information, she went up to the land office and filed on that quarter section, plus the wedge that run between that and the road, so we'd have the road frontage, because the road run at a bit of an angle. Mm-hmm. And I was working up in Lavengood. I'd gotten transferred up to Lavengood. I was working up there. And the 20th of June, they switched us around, and John Matson was working out at Chena Hot Springs Road, and John, I don't know what the story was, but anyhow, John and I switched places, and John went to Lavengood, and I come out Chena Hot Springs, and so when they sent me out here, they sent an 8 with a sled behind it, and I was there at right where the Nazarene Church is now. And we got on our sled, put all equipment, and I had a big old tarp with me and some baggage. And we spent all day going down through the old sled road, because it had thawed out enough and we were getting stuck and having quite a time with that sled. And we got to camp about 4 o'clock.
This was a maintenance camp?
Yeah,
they were building the road from 19 mile out to 14 mile.
Oh, from 16 mile.
16 mile.
Yeah.
Building back toward town, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they put the camp out there, and then they built...
I see. Okay.
Anyhow, Glenn Pruitt was the head mechanic out there, and Glenn met the sled, and he said, where do you want to take your stuff? Well, I said, right across the creek. I piled on that homestead over there. We got over there, and he invited me over to have dinner with him that night. He had a little trailer out there. And I went back over and cut some spruce poles, and put up a framework, and pulled my tarp over it, spread my sleeping bag, and
first night on the homestead. Huh? What a deal. Well, take a look at this.
Yeah.
And you can pick out where you were, I think. I don't know, maybe this doesn't go out far enough. No, it doesn't.
No,
I take it back.
Get out there.
Well, too bad. No, because see, here, I should have known that. Yeah.
Here's Ackerman.
Yeah.
Charlie May. No.
See, this is 53, and so that's as far as anyone.
When we came back from Lavengood, we stayed in Charlie May's cabin. She and the kids stayed there that first week.
All right.
We've known the Charlie Mays for years.
Sure.
We stayed in their cabin.
Yeah. Well, there are some other things here that you might find interesting to look at from here on in. This is the whole school district at that time.
Yeah.
So it goes clear on the other side of town. And I've got a copy of this you can take home with you that isn't all marked up like this one is.
Yeah.
But, a lot of familiar names.
Yes, yes.
And a lot of stories that go along with them. I'm looking at Rissy. Now, Rissy is one of the people whose stories you will get. And, of course, Lee's got a memory like an elephant
Oh, yes.
How's Greta doing?
Oh, Greta's been dead quite a few years.
Oh, I did too know that.
Yeah.
That's why I quit these things anymore, because I cannot remember. And
we're gone, so much of the time.
Yeah, it's easy to miss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lee and I used to serve on soil conservation together.
Oh, sure, I bet you did. Yeah.
He and I.
Well, you'll enjoy his stories.
I'll bet. He's got some good ones.
Yeah.
Lee and I were, we were on a, on a, advisory board for the university at one time.
This was an agricultural advisory deal sometime?
Yeah, that was when Horace Drury was head of the farm out there. And he was trying to get, he had this board made up of different ones to try to have input as to which direction to be going, apparently, anyhow. Lee and I were both on that, and there were people from Palmer and Wasilla, Anchorage. One of them was, newspaper editor's wife or sister or something from down there. I forget her name now.
From Anchorage?
Yeah.
Atwood? Atwood?
Atwood, yeah. Yeah.
That was some of the first names.
Yeah. Then there was one guy from back east, and he was affiliated with a university back in Indiana, I believe. And he seemed to be kind of the guy that Drury really listened to. And Drury was going off in a direction that Lee and I didn't think was quite the way to go, and we couldn't get through to him. And so we were trying every way in the world to get next to this fella. And we had a meeting down in Wasilla, and they were having a tour that afternoon, and this fella from Indiana wasn't going on that tour. And so Lee and I didn't go. And we were gonna find a time to get him off in a corner somewhere. And old Horace Drury kept him right under his thumb all afternoon. We never did get a chance to talk to him. But sometimes you have to do things like that.
Oh, yes. We understand that.
Yeah.
Horace had been schooled in some rough tactics because he was a civilian in the military, what kind of an officer, a scientific office, the Aeromed Labs out there. And so he knew how to play the game. You were up against an old pro.
Yeah, you bet. Oh, we tried.
Well, this thing is about to start.
Bellingham, Williams, Bremerton, Reverson.
Mm-hmm.
We got it sitting in our living room.
Well, I'm sure it's a big help because I was having a lot of trouble with that sort of thing now. And I say we've gone to some other measures, but I was telling Don that he wants it over there and they won't swivel. You can't get one that swivels. I guess it wouldn't be stable, probably. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't want to replace his swivel chair, so we're looking at other possibilities.
I see you have one of those lift things in
there. Yeah.
Does it work well enough?
Yeah, it's a help.
Mm-hmm.
You can set it for several different weights, and actually, I think he's got it on the lightest weight. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it seems like it doesn't work very well, but maybe we haven't played enough.
Yeah, I've seen them in the catalogs and wondered how they would work.
Well, you ought to try it.
No, I have my lift chair now. I don't
you don't need it. Well, the nice thing about that is you can haul it around and put it on a dining chair or another place.
Yeah.
So, when you had to get a house built, didn't you?
Yeah.
I remember your old log cabin. Do you remember our old log cabin? I don't suppose you had much reason to see it, but We lived in one that wasn't probably much bigger than what you have for about 30 years.
Yeah?
Yeah, we built it, you know, to live in a year.
Uh-huh.
20 years later, I told him it's about, that year's just about up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you one thing. We sure learned how to raise kids out there.
Oh, yes.
The kids learned a good education.
You betcha. So did ours. I think anybody who lives out here would tell you the same thing.
Yep.
It's one of the best things. They all learned how to work.
That's right.
One of the advantages of a log cabin, you can pound an alien anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I learned that with ours. When we moved into this house, I had to start being careful.
Uh-huh. Yes.
They could ruin it, you know. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for them, that's for sure.
Well, they're certainly homey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of heat did you have?
Wood.
Wood? Barrel stove?
Well, we had a barrel stove down. We had a dugout under.
Mm-hmm.
We had a barrel stove down there, and we run a stove pipe right up through the... Well, the first year we had this barrel stove down there, we took a 15-gallon oil drum and cut the ends and run a stovepipe up,
uh-huh.
We'll put that through the floor to, uh-huh. for a safety.
Right.
And then we had a regular chimney safety up through the roof. But I'd go down and stoke that thing up at night, you know, and if I didn't do it just exactly right, which I sometimes didn't get it just right, we'd lay there in bed and that stovepipe would start getting red up through the cabin. Well, then you didn't sleep till the stovepipe cooled
down.
Well, yeah. Well, our ceiling was
cardboard
with moss on top of it.
Uh-huh. Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, good old moss. That was everybody's insulation.
Yeah, no, that. We moved into that cabin on Labor Day. We had a blanket hung over the door for a door. And, but at least we had a roof over our head and a floor under our
right.
feet. We were out of that tent.
And no rent to pay.
Yeah.
Or house payment.
Yeah, we'd never built anything before. It looked just like a corn crib.
Yeah.
Well, that's something I was wondering about. You say you were country people. Were you farm family?
Yeah.
Now, you were a mechanic. You weren't a farmer professionally, so to speak.
Well, I was raised on a farm, but I used to skip school to work in the Ford garage.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we both grew up on typical little farms in Minnesota where you raised a bit of this and a bit of
mm-hmm.
that, raised your meat and raised your eggs.
Your subsistence farming.
Right.
Yeah.
But that was their livelihood, too.
Sure.
Yeah. You had your dairy cows to get a cream jerk or milk jerk, and the rest of it you raised.
And so living out there didn't scare you too much. That was... You knew what to do with that.
And you know, it was funny, that first winter out there, the road wasn't open, but it was passable.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have people from town come out to visit us. Well, we went to the Lutheran Church at that time, and there was John Savella that I worked for, the highway department, and the Reams, Duff Seth's, the Mays, and they'd come out, visit occasionally. They'd come out Christmas and brought a bunch of stuff for the kids. And the kids still talk about that that Christmas.
That's the best Christmas they ever had.
This was the first Christmas. Yeah.
And
we just don't do a lot of
these
buying for Christmas and making.
These people, what in the world do you want to live way out here?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want this worthless land way out here? And we've heard that so many times.
Yeah.
I think some of them wish they had some of that worthless land.
Oh, I'll bet you. Well, your site's particularly pretty in there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, the road's a lot better now than it was then, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We, all of these people we've talked to, talk roads.
Uh-huh.
Because roads were such a problem for everyone.
Yeah.
Especially during breakup. Sometimes in the winter. Yeah.
Well, the story that I like to tell about the roads is when they rebuilt it in 60,
64?
In that area. It was over a couple, 3 year period, as it turned out.
PK had the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And they started down here by Louds and tore that up, and it rained and rained,
mm-hmm.
and turned to quagmire, and they moved on out and started tearing that up,
uh-huh.
and it rained some more. And they had the whole thing, just a total quagmire all the way.
Yep, we lived through it.
There were days when I would leave work or leave home at 4 o'clock in the morning and be late for work at 8,
mm-hmm.
and be dragged through.
I have a front bumper from a 57 Chevy.
Yeah, 56, 57 Chevy.
One of those cats pulled off. Pulling me out of the mud.
Yeah.
Well, one of our favorite stories was about Alice Kimmel. You must have known Alice.
Oh yes.
Getting stuck down there, and they. Well, this is a different story, and I think it's in ours, so I won't put it in yours. You'll get it. But anyway, yeah, there were a lot of stories about that year.
I'll never forget the time when Jim Turner. Lived out there in the A-frame, out of 21 mile. Anyhow, he drove a Ford station wagon, a pretty nice car at that time. And they were towing him through the mud, going home. And he heard some things didn't seem right, and he looked back, and here punched a hole in the floorboard right behind the front seat, and that station wagon was acting just like a can scooping up mud. The whole back end of that station wagon was plumb full of mud.
Talking about the Kimmels, Kathy and her kids rode the school bus, you know, Carl's
mm-hmm.
driver. She tells of Becky Kimmel. She was always getting into trouble, and she said Carl would just pick her up and give her a few swats on her behind.
Take her across his knee.
Can you imagine a school bus driver doing that now?
No way. My gosh, it was effective.
Yeah, it worked, you know. So they had to quit it.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, geez.
Yeah. No, our little cabin, when we got it closed in, she picked moss out of the woods and chinked the logs,
mm-hmm.
and then we cut little birch poles and laid in there to hold the chinking in.
Before that, you know, of course we had lanterns with light. You'd be outside and you'd look through it and hear just like a corn crib.
So how long was it before you got power out there?
Well, we didn't get power till 61, I think. Somewhere. We were without power several years.
Yeah.
But in this cabin, we didn't have any lumber to work with. It was,
mm-hmm.
We cut it right off out of the woods, or we didn't have it. Except for, I got a real good buy on a bunch of tongue and groove cedar. That's what our floor was.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a V groove. Was that fun to try to keep clean?
Catcher. Oh boy.
Mud, you could just run out.
Yeah.
Put your knife through there.
And our ceiling, we went and I got all the crating material I could from the highway camp, which wasn't much, but it was 1x4s, 1x6s. And we stripped the ceiling. We had logs across,
mm-hmm.
and we stripped the ceiling with those 1x's. Then we went down to Nerland's and got big furniture, cardboard boxes,
mm-hmm.
and that was our ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And then she pulled moss. She and the kids covered the whole thing with moss up there. Talk about a fire trap.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's stories about that.
Herning down here had a fire that started at what, like 2 a.m.?
Yeah, middle of the night.
What really was the whole problem was that moss in the ceiling, it kept creeping, and you get a hose in there and get it all put out, and decide, well, we can wind the hose up town and look up and here's this glow. More moss.
Our daughter-in-law from Chicago had a chimney fire. She'd never used a wood stove before, you know. This is Donnie's wife. And got a chimney fire, and here she was pregnant, and I was, well, you know what I am. And she tried to climb up the side of the log cabin, and I'd be handing her pails of water, put out the fire.
Oh, yeah, it's a wonder we didn't have more trouble than we did. Oh. With all the stuff we built with and lived with.
Yeah, and then
our walls were high glass. They'd torn up an army pad mattress.
Well, yeah, that's the chinking in ours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, after that first winter, we decided we couldn't fire that barrel stove enough to keep it warm in there. I mean, I woke up one morning about 3 o'clock, and it was 50 below outside, and it was about zero in the house.
Yeah.
I got a hold of a roll of Bisqueen, and I covered that Bisqueen, or covered that cardboard with Bisqueen. What a difference that made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, then, the next year, Tim Orison homesteaded there by the lakes, and he worked out at the base, and they were tearing out all of the old wardrobes in the barracks and putting in metal wardrobes. And these were all wood wardrobes. And they were hauling that stuff to the dump.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, being a homesteader, you know, he saw use for that stuff. And he started passing the word around out there. And so they made a deal that any of that stuff that went to the dump, we could get for a penny a pound. Well, Tim had a flatbed, 3/4 ton flatbed truck, or 1 ton, I guess it was. Anyhow, we bought a whole load of wardrobe doors, and those doors are between 6 and 7 feet long and about 13 inches wide.
Ooh.
And that whole ceiling is wardrobe doors.
Mm-hmm.
Took the hardware off of them. And
I finally got rid of that tongue and groove floor too.
Yeah.
For the same way, same material?
No.
Not quite.
That was different.
That was another. Gordy Duffseth had a cabinet shop on College Road. And so he told me one time, he said, if you need kindling wood, because he knew we were burning green wood all the time. And he said, why don't you come by every week and clean up behind my bandsaw and so on. And he said, you can have all that. Instead of me hauling it to the dump, you can have all that. So every week I'd go over there with the pickup and I'd load on every size, shape, description of plywood mostly. Some half inch, some 3/4, some 5/8, some... I mean, everything. Well, we sorted it out, we got it home, and we sorted all of the 3/4 into one pile. And so then, at night, she and I would take this 3/4 plywood, and we would start fitting pieces.
Piecing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that floor is all, the cedar is all covered with scraps of plywood from that cabinet shop. And there are pieces in there that aren't over an inch or two square, but they fit.
They fit. Mm-hmm.
And also, at that same time, Gordy had a nail box full of nails. And he says, why don't you take that out of here? And it's the box that the guys all emptied their nail aprons in at night. And here again, all different kinds of nails. She and I would sit there at the kitchen table and we'd sort nails at night. And this floor is all nailed down with headless finishing nails.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. talk about recycling. People don't know what recycling is, do they?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what kind of a stove did you go to from a barrel stove?
Well, we had a barrel stove all the time down in the dugout under there, but then we got a wood cook stove.
Ah, yes.
And that old wood cook stove is
one of the best inventions.
Yeah.
We had
it would make the best bread.
You betcha. I don't know why it's different, but it is.
Yeah.
Been watching the price of wood cook stoves, and they have skyrocketed in the last three or four years.
Yeah. Well, then in 62, our barn burned. And that was just before, that was Thanksgiving Day. And that was just before Carol was born. And I don't know, we don't know to this day what the effect was, but she had convulsions after that. And so about a year later, when you went down to Rochester, we had tried everything here, couldn't find any cause or reason for it. And so we went down to Minnesota and went through Rochester. And at that time, the kids were, well, Dale was probably 14, 15, and the kids were in school, and so there was nobody to keep the fire going during the day. And we had to do something. It was wintertime, and so we bought a BTU electric heater. And we set that up at a 45 degree. It had a thermostat arrangement. So the kids would come home from school and the house would be somewhat warm.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be warm enough that they wouldn't build a fire in the front, you know? So we had that for backup heat for a long time, that electric heater.
So you did have power by then?
Yeah, we had power then.
When did you finally get phones out there?
Oh, boy.
Because I think maybe you got them. I don't know how far they went out, but they went out that way before they came this way.
Well, yeah. You see, we've got that somewhere in our records.
Yeah, well, it's not important.
But anyhow, that was another thing, that bunch out there, they were always fighting for something, you know. Like when they had the road all tore up, we wrote a letter to the commanding general at Eielson, asking permission. They had a Bailey Bridge across the river, to explaining the problem, you know, and asking permission to go that way. Well, we never got an answer to our letter, but they removed the Bailey Bridge. And, before we had electricity out there, a bunch of us, we'd been working on Golden Valley and pushing them and so on. And I'll never forget, Kenny Dines went down there one time and they had their demo kitchen there at the Golden Valley office. And so Kenny informed him one day that if we didn't get electricity pretty soon, he was going to send his wife down there and check out their laundry service there,
right,
at the demo kitchen or demo. And just, you know, and they knew we were alive out there.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's what you had to do.
And we did the same with telephones. We worked with the city, and we worked with North Pole.
Yep.
And no, it was impossible to go out there with North Pole. Yeah, we could do it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they did it. They got the city stopped.
Yep.
Or vice versa. Of course, the service was pretty minimal there for a long time.
That's right. But that's, you know, and this is the thing that I credit that group out there for doing a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when we first went out there, we had to go over to North Pole to vote.
Huh.
Our voting precinct was Badger Road.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so we jumped on that one real hard, and we got our own precinct out there.
Okay, now you've mentioned some names of people out there. Who else is there that you haven't mentioned?
Well, the first winter we were there, there was Bob Hearn, who was a bachelor at that time, and the Longwiths.
Oh, yeah.
And we were the only ones beyond the Lucina Bridge that winter.
Hmm.
The Longwiths had about the same age children as ours, so we both homeschooled.
Okay. For how long?
Just that 1 year.
The first year
they went into Fairbanks.
Then they gave us a school after that.
Well, yeah, and that's a good question. When did the school first open out there?
Well, the winter of 57, 58, we homeschooled. 58, 59, they went to town. In 59, we had the school. Fall of 59. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we all get those. Yesterday, Connie got, we were up there, Connie and David's, and she got calls like that. We get them in town.
Yeah, we got a computer oriented, but they're sure annoying.
Yeah.
There they are.
Yeah, it was fall of 59 when we had our first. And you see, there again, that's something that the community did out there. They pushed and pushed for a school.
Mm-hmm.
And so they told us that, well, they were sure there wasn't enough.
Those are some of the early.
Yes, right. New voting booth. Bob Longwith, Mrs. Haddon Davis, Mrs. Juanita Duncan, Don Roberts, and Don McKee. Oh, that's great.
There should be one about the school.
Mrs. Ronald Thomas.
Ron Thomas, yeah. Norma.
Look how skinny he was then. He had hair.
Yeah. Well, he was younger, too. We were all younger then, weren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, Trans-Alaska, yeah.
Here's him with Kim, huh?
Oh, sure enough. Well, you know, I have the capacity to put pictures in these stories. Unfortunately, I don't have much luck with newspaper reproductions. Oh, yeah, the closet.
61, the school. And I had another picture, and I took it out because they were doing a 25-year thing at the school, and they didn't return the picture to me.
Oh, yeah.
This is one that got us in trouble.
Yeah.
Flatlanders didn't like that.
Yeah, but the old farmers declare open season on hunters, huh? Oh, by Todd Snap, wouldn't you know?
By that time, there were people that had moved out beyond us,
mm-hmm.
you know, like down by Anders and Valley Center and Tax and that.
Right.
And they thought we were referring to the Flatlanders.
Oh. Oh, this looks fascinating. It'd be fun to have the time to go through that. You've done a great job of saving all this. Don't let it get away.
No.
Incidentally, I took all the homemakers' records and whatnot into the museum archives some years ago now, and I assume they've have kept them. That's what they're supposed to be doing. So
I'll show you the first day we went to pick out our homestead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wonderful.
Yes, there's old Francis.
Yeah.
Sitting on a log out there.
I hope you're going to get names on all these, because now you know who he is.
Francis,
are your,
all
are
I
your kids going to know, or is anyone else?
There are pictures of a cabin going up.
Oh, wonderful. What were the dimensions of your cabin, anyway?
16 by 28.
Well, that's a pretty good-sized cabin.
These are some of the first families out there.
Okay, and who... Okay, the Davises we mentioned, Watsons? What were their other names?
They homesteaded what is Lindsay's place.
Oh, okay.
The
log mill.
They never finished proving up on there. They sold their claim to Lindsay, and Lindsay finished up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where were Dines?
Dines were right this side of the school.
Okay.
The top of the hill there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They lived in a tent for seven
Six years.
It's amazing.
He's a carpenter.
Yeah, well, that figures. And Orison?
Orison, they were right by the lake.
Okay.
Just the other side of the lake.
Well, now, you're going to tell me where the lake is. I don't picture...
16 miles.
You know where the lodge is, Tulip Lodge?
Yeah.
Those Tulip
Lakes.
Oh, okay, those lakes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's what we call the lakes.
Well, that makes sense. When you have something else to identify them by, I guess you... good pictures, yeah. Building a slaughterhouse in 70. Yeah. Well, aren't those... wonderful. I've got album. Won't quit.
Yeah.
Keeping them going is labor of love, and it is a labor.
Well, that's something she's been doing the past several years. We aren't great on Christmas presents and so on.
Well,
you know, it's a bunch of not buy something for somebody that they don't want.
That's
right. So. We take a lot of pictures or have them in our travels and so on, and she makes up an album every year.
Oh, I think that's...
And gives one to each one of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that, well, Kathy was in Mississippi.
Stop. So I'm going to stop.